Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 330. Welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Tarullo. I serve as pastor of Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Countryside, Illinois. And with me, and by that I mean in my presence, and by that I mean directly in front of me, is Rob McKenzie. Rob serves as an elder here at Westminster. And we're currently wondering whether or not the barking dog is coming onto the recording. I don't think it is, but if you guys hear Tippy in the background eating someone, just let us know. You did have to walk the gauntlet.
I did have to walk the gauntlet. She got a little piece of me, so maybe she's just want more. She's like the crocodile in Peter Pan.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. How's it going?
She was even more excited today. I think it's because she's cooped.
She's been cooped up because of the rain.
Yeah.
She, you know, we opened the door this morning, let her out. She's like,
It's not that bad.
No, it's not. But she's like getting, you know, like an old lady kind of feel about her. So she's like, I don't want to go out in that way. I'll hold it. You know?
What, till tomorrow?
Well, she has been out in the breaks, right? Okay. But she has been cooped up today. She's a dog that loves to run around and I think I've said this before, but anytime a bird will like fly through or land even on the power lines, the telephone lines or anything that come across our yard, she will bark at that bird. And it is so annoying. She'll just sit there and bark and bark and bark and bark. But she loves, that's the energy she has. Yes.
Well.
Yes.
Speaking of energy.
You're going to say something like that.
We had an overwhelming response to our...
Oh, my goodness.
To our Daniel... Daniel Diet is what we were calling it. Has anybody done a book with Daniel?
Well, yeah. I am just so out of touch with...
I was in publishing for, you know...
That's true.
Like 17, 18 years, and I never heard of it. I might have even seen it and just rolled my eyes and walked away.
Yeah.
Because it's been out for a while. But, well, it's not. We have one of our listeners, Jordan Hunt, reached out and one of several that reached out.
Yes.
And talked about how the Daniel fast. He talked about the Daniel fast. He was the first one that brought it to our attention.
Yeah, but how is eating vegetables a Daniel fast?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that, you know, they...
Thought that one through?
Apparently it works. It's been out for, it looks like over a decade. And I did a quick little dive into the metadata. Mm-hmm. It's selling fairly well still. Wow. So we did have someone with Reform Forum, Hannah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, yeah. She knew of
who it. Who has been subject to, she was tormented by having to follow it.
But anyway.
She did not seem to be happy about when she had, we don't want to.
You're just like throwing her under the bus here.
I'm not throwing her under the bus. She was our tester of the Daniel fast.
Oh, yes. This is what we do. You send subs to us, and we're just going to have, you know, test it. We're going to...
Feelings are mixed. I don't...
No, I feel so out of it when I don't know things like that. I mean, I know there's Ezekiel bread, right? There's like, that's like something, right?
Is there? Oh,
there's Ezekiel bread out there.
Oh, my goodness. It was suggested that maybe the Peter diet would be better. And I am all for that.
Yeah. Isn't that just like a eat everything diet?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Just in moderation.
Yeah. So I'd like to announce the Theology Simple Profound Peter diet.
Eat everything in moderation.
Soon to
it's
be
all clean.
Amazon forthcoming soon.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we did, you know, so I don't get these emails very often, but Rob gets them more than I do, but they came to, you know, mail at reformforum.org. And that's just more than we've normally gotten. And it all had to do with the Daniel diet or the Daniel fast, however it's being sold and marketed.
Well, it's just because it's kind of the, you know, quintessential cheesy evangelicalism. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that we're going to put out a Daniel. Because, I mean, like this author, and I mean, I do, the author is a health food person. She, you know, does, she's into nutrition. I think she's got education in nutrition. So I'm sure that what she's doing is perfectly fine. And she's looking at it from an educated nutritional standpoint. But it's just the fact that, you know, it just sounds cheesy.
Isn't it just eating vegetables and water?
Yes, basically.
So,
but I mean, how do
you sell that?
Right. I mean, I guess, you know, we have to be careful because we haven't like read the book.
No. This is just the fad. We're talking about the fad.
If this continues, right, we can't get any more emails. We have to have Hannah on the podcast.
She can explain. Explain the diet to us.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just a fruits and vegetable based healthy diet.
I'm sure. Yeah, I guess. Okay, fine. Sure. Okay, we're done now. I do agree with you though. The Peter diet sounds a lot better. All right, everybody.
But we are in Daniel.
Yes, we're still in Daniel.
That's how we got
Neither
there.
Of us are on a Daniel diet.
No.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Well, we were talking about
smoking a pork shoulder this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, have you started? Is it right now?
No, on Saturday.
Oh, because that maybe was like a 3 or 4 day.
No, it's like 8 to 10 hours.
Is there a special reason for this?
Yeah, my daughter's graduation party.
Oh. Well, that's right.
You'll get to enjoy.
Yeah. I think we're coming.
Yeah. Hey, now. Yeah. I got a graduate from 12th grade. And so we thought we'd do pork shoulder. Anyway, we were on the subject of food. So
I almost got us to the podcast. I almost did.
I just completely messed it up.
Totally derailed us. And that's my job.
All right. So. Go ahead. I'll be quiet.
Go ahead. As I was saying, so we're going to go through the book of Daniel, and we were talking about Nebuchadnezzar has had a dream, and he's done something unusual. He's asked for not only the interpretation of the dream, but the actual dream itself. He wants the people that are supposed to be the smartest people in the land and have mystical powers and are in touch with the other side to give him the actual dream, tell him what the dream was, which is, you know, as the Chaldeans would say, no king has ever asked this before. And the only people that can, and there's nobody that can, the only person who could do this are the gods. They don't dwell in the flesh. So stop asking mere mortals. What you want to know can only be revealed by the gods. And Nebuchadnezzar, he doesn't care. Because it's a very logical thing. I mean, they kind of throw up their hands like, we can't do this.
Yeah, we can only make things up that we know about.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Tell us what your dream was, and we'll have a very creative way to tell you what it means.
Exactly.
But it must have troubled this dream, which probably came to him several times. We don't know if it came one night several times or if it was a couple of days, but it troubled him so much that he has to know the interpretation. Mm-hmm. There's something, you know, and this dream, it comes from God. That's and we'll talk about that a little bit more, but I think that's part of the reason why he is so animate about truly knowing the actual interpretation, because he knows this isn't a normal dream. This is more of a vision. This is, of course, in his mind, he's probably saying this is from the gods, and he wants the people that he pays that say, you know, when it talks about the sorcerers and that, these are people who say we have connections to the other side. Mm-hmm. We can get you the information that is hidden from mere mortals. And he's saying, great, finally do it. And they're like, yeah, we can't do that.
Yeah. These people described as magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and as we've described them, as it's described in the scriptures, but we talked about them, the Chaldeans, a section of the Babylonian Empire where these folks were called the Chaldeans, which eventually all of them we call Chaldeans, but with some type of, you know, maybe wise man kind of credentials. And Daniel and his friends are also numbered among these individuals, whether or not they were thought to be the magicians, enchanters, or sorcerers, or the Chaldeans.
Yeah.
But they were numbered among those who were wise, and so. Right. When it turns out that they can't do this, the people who were in the king's courts at the moment, who were brought in, they're brought in to answer the question. And then you have you know, the decree that's going to go out, kill everyone, mm-hmm. kill all of these people. You know, Nebuchadnezzar's just like, you know what? I am sick and tired of being duped.
Yeah.
And if you can't do this simple request, which, let's just be plain, has never been asked before.
Right.
But Nebuchadnezzar's in one of his fits. Because as you said, he's troubled, and you know, the text, of chapter two, Daniel chapter two, really does describe for us well, you know, the way in which he is troubled in spirit. And so Daniel's just like, you know what, it needs to come from a God, and I can do that.
Right. Well, they weren't there. Daniel's three friends weren't there right. at the time, which is also interesting that Nebuchadnezzar is not, putting up with any of this, even if you weren't there. If you're, like you said, they're numbered in this category, you're going to be killed. And Daniel asks for time. He asks to that he can go and think about this and then come back, and he's going to give. So everything's put on pause. Mm-hmm. So Daniel is saving the lives of everyone.
Of everyone described as a wise man in verse 14. Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. So all of these people are under this one large rubric of the wise men. So the enchanters, the magicians, the sorcerers, the Chaldeans. And Daniel was a part of that group. Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And it's pretty, it sounds pretty hasty decree on Nebuchadnezzar's part. But
I get a very Henry VIII kind of vibe from Nebuchadnezzar. Very powerful, very, you know, the presence. Henry VIII had that presence wherever he went. And I think that's Nebuchadnezzar has that as well. You know, Daniel and his three friends, when they go to pray, because that's what they do. They have to figure out, they're praying to God that God will reveal the information that the king wants. There was no guarantee that God was going to reveal that to them. You know, God could have been silent. He could have been. Now they're, of course, they're looking at the only way they can get the answer for this is the God who gives dreams to let them know what the dream was and the interpretation of it. But they could have been killed right along with them. Now I love the emphasis that God gives Nebuchadnezzar's this dream that he then demands for the full interpretation, including the dream. And right away, the wise men, you know, all these categories are focused on the fact that only God or a God can actually do this. And eventually, of course, we know that Daniel comes up. God does give him the interpretation and the dream itself. And so looking way ahead after this is done, all those people that almost had their lives taken are pointed to God. Mm-hmm. Now, who knows if the Lord saved any of them? We have no idea. But it still is this in exile. God right at the beginning. This is right at the beginning of their exile, and God is making His presence known. That he is the giver of dreams and the giver of interpretations and sovereign over all things. Mm-hmm. So here's Daniel now. Him and his three friends are praying, and Daniel is given the interpretation, and we're told a night vision. So he has this, you know, a vision, a dream. It's kind of in the same category. And Daniel, he's given the same dream, or at least, you know, demonstrated this is the dream that was given to Nebuchadnezzar. And so he sees it, he's given the interpretation, he understands it, and then he's ready to deliver it to the king. But I think what happens in this whole passage is very interesting. So why don't you go ahead and read some of the verses?
Yeah, so we're at Daniel 2, verse 17. Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, and told him to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. Therefore Daniel went in to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation." So that's Daniel 2, 17 to 24.
Yeah, it's really interesting in that passage because we're told something at the beginning of this book that is going to come into play throughout the whole book. That, and, you know, again, and the emphasis, even though they're in exile, the emphasis on the sovereignty of God. Daniel says, just, I know you just read this, but yeah, summing it up, that wisdom and might belong to God. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise, knowledge to those with understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness. Light dwells with him. Daniel praises God because he revealed not just the dream, but also its interpretation. I think a key with everything here is that God knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. This idea of darkness and light, we talked about this last week, where you know, up until the modern times, so like 100 years ago, people dwell in this idea of hiddenness within, like darkness or forests, or this mystery that was within the world. This is why when you go back and you look at all these different cultures, all these cultures have like mythical creatures and things like that. You know, there's fairies in every culture and in one form or another, and goblins and things like that. And these things come about because of the unknown. You have this great mystery. And it's interesting to me that now, as because we are in more modern world, everything is at our fingertips. You want to know all the information, you just look it up. You want to know, we've been to the deepest part of the ocean, even though the ocean is still very unexplored, but we've been to the moon, we've been to the deepest part of the ocean, we've been to the highest mountains, right? We've been through all the forests. There's lots of movies been made about people going into the Amazon forest or things like that. The mystery that the world lived with up until about 100 years ago has been removed from our daily lives. And, you know, but at this time, when we're talking about Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar and those people that lived during that time, the idea of what's in the dark or what's in the forest or what's in was a everyday kind of fear, wonder, dependent on, I mean, if you're living in a city, maybe you didn't experience it as much,
sure,
but you still lived with the idea of outside the borders of the city or outside the borders of the nation, that it's all mystery and strange creatures are living there.
Danger.
You know, yeah.
I mean, it was just dangerous. Dark times were dangerous times too. Darkness, you know, nighttime. And, you know, I know you're saying how that mystery is gone from us, but I was thinking there is still a bunch of that for us. We just don't admit it as much, right? Yeah. The depths of the sea is still dark. We've seen some of it, but we haven't explored it all. There's the outside universe and such. And
You know, I was going to get to that.
Okay, you're going to get to the space, and you know, there's the Loch Ness. You know, we have Bigfoot. You know, those types of.
Whoa. Nessie's real. We're just going to get that clear right now.
You get what I'm saying. So there's still a desire to hold on to some of that mystery. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to take you. I think the fact that Daniel and his friends are about to be destroyed, that's language, right? Sure. So they go to prayer. Mm-hmm. They go to the God of heaven and earth, the one who is, has the name that is blessed forevermore, who belongs all wisdom and might. This one that you've just been describing, that Daniel describes, they go to him to seek his mercy concerning this mystery, the dream, in order that they might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Now, we don't typically have this foreboding sense of being destroyed weighing over us or anything. Yeah. But yet we still don't go to God as often as we ought with this kind of information on our lips, or adoration even on our lips. Now, this is at the response, right? This is their response to God answering the prayer, but...
Right, and there was a death sentence hanging over them that now is removed.
And now is removed, right? But I want to encourage us to just take from Daniel that sense of going to God with all kinds of needs, right? I think, you know, we get that from the New Testament. We get it from all sorts of places in Scripture. But here's just another example for us that in every moment of need, of trouble, whatever it might be, good, difficult, or small, that we can go to the Lord in prayer. Now, he's not always going to answer us in this in the same exact way, like a vision of the night, as it's described here. Whether or not that, you kind of described it, you think it's like probably a dream.
A vision. I mean, a vision is often like a dream. You kind of go into this.
Yeah, I tend to think of a vision as outside of like the person, though, like they can see it visually. That's how I think of a vision at night. But the when you said it's like a dream, a vision in your, which I consider more like a dream, like what Nebuchadnezzar had, like something internal.
Right.
So I'm not. I don't know.
Well, I think Nebuchadnezzar's was when.
Certainly
they were dreams.
Yeah, that's how they're described. Yeah.
And this is given to Daniel, the night vision. It's more, I mean, again, I'm not saying this is exactly what happened. We're speculating a little bit.
If you did, I'd be wondering.
Yeah, but it seems more, they are seeing it, but it's more almost like a trance kind of. And that's not probably not the best word to use, but it's not like, if there are other people standing by them, they don't see it. It's given to the person.
Mm-hmm.
But Daniel understood it, and he's given the interpretation. And Daniel himself, even though Nebuchadnezzar has experienced this dream, Daniel's the first person to experience this dream vision and be given the interpretation, which he'll explain. But he is looking, he understands now that Babylon's going to be replaced, and Medo-Persia is going to be replaced, and Greece is going to be replaced, and Rome is going to come out, and Rome is going to be replaced. He understands what's happening. And we'll get more into that next week when we talk about the dream itself, how important it is for the covenant, how important it is for Israel, and then, of course, how important it is for world history. But Daniel's the first person to really see this, and I'm sure that he told the other three, and they're rejoicing.
Yeah,
they're rejoicing in what the Lord's going to do.
So, I mean, you're saying he was the first to know that there's going to be these successions of kingdoms, right? He doesn't know the length of time, the details, all that kind of stuff, right?
But I mean, that's why he's saying, you know, in this that you know, God, when he sets up kingdoms, he removes kings and sets up kings.
Yeah,
you know, that is what's going to be happening. And it's you know, it's astonishing. I mean, I'm just trying to think about Daniel's reaction to this.
I mean, so he's blessing the name of God forever and ever, to whom belongs wisdom and might. Okay, so wisdom and might. Why? Well, if he's seen the dream and he's got the interpretation, might, because kingdoms totter under him, right? And they rise, they totter. Wisdom for putting it all together, right? All of this is going to lead the people of God through centuries and come to a point in time when, out of all of this, the Son of God, the Messiah, will be born, right? So now, whether how you know much Daniel sees of that is another thing, but he sees the wisdom and the might of God through these visions, through and the interpretation of them. He sees what is going to take place, and he just explodes with, you know, with just this sense of awe of who this sovereign is, that is the God of Israel, right? I mean, he's the one who changes times and season. He removes kings and sets up kings or kingdoms, right? He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding, right? I mean, himself in that regard at this point. And as you were helping us understand, he reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, right? So these things that people are all around them afraid of or find mysterious, he's the one who can break through all of that. Because the light dwells within him, with him. To you, O God of my fathers, right? So hearkening now back to Abraham and the patriarchs, I give you thanks and praise, for you have given now me wisdom and might. So the one who has wisdom and might gives wisdom and might to Daniel and have now made known to me. He made a request. It was made known to him, the matter of the king. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, kind of going back to what you were saying a little bit ago, you know, we should be encouraged to go to the Lord every day mm-hmm. with our own worries, our own unknown.
Yeah,
and God will help us to understand. He might not, you know, tell us exactly what we want to know, but He is a loving Father who wants to give us good things and has told us, you know, you need to come to me and ask. You want to know these things? You want to be given good things? Come ask. As any child would go to their parent mm-hmm. and ask for their desires, that is God drawing us to himself, saying, make your desires known.
Yeah, you don't have because you don't ask.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's a wonderful lesson. I mean, Daniel and his friends could have just, and his companions just could have said, you know what? We're dead. Let's run.
Sure.
Right? And it would be yeah. a very different book of Daniel.
Well, I don't think we'd have the book of Daniel.
Exactly right.
At that point. It's so after they're done praying and giving thanks to God, you know, they go and they talk to Arioch. And basically they're like, okay, don't kill anybody. I need to make an appointment with the king. I need to talk to the king. I have this information, but I do. He kind of emphasizes, okay, don't kill anybody. And, you know, for Arioch, it really seems like he didn't want to kill all these people. He's, you know, the king says, okay, go kill all the wise men and all these people that fit into these categories, including, the Chaldeans, who not only are supposed to be the most educated people in the kingdom, but Nebuchadnezzar's relatives. Because he was a Chaldean, and Arioch, I'm sure, was hoping that Daniel would come up with a solution, that somebody would come up with a solution, because he didn't want to kill anybody. But then when he goes to the king, and I'm not sure if we actually read this far, maybe I, where Arioch goes to the king.
No, we didn't read that far.
And maybe we should let's read a couple more verses.
All right, you just tell me when to stop. How's that? All right, we'll continue at verse 25. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus to him, I have found among the exiles from Judah a man who will make known to the king the interpretation. The king declared to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation? Daniel answered the king and said, no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days.
So it's interesting, Arioch, and I'll ask you this. Do you think that Arioch is trying to take credit?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't even think about that while reading.
For Daniel? I've actually gone back and forth with this.
Then, as Arioch brought in, I have found among the exiles from Judah that, like,
yeah,
by saying that.
Yeah. Don't worry about it, King. I got you covered. I found somebody.
I don't know if goodness gracious. I don't, who knows? It could just very well be, you know, he's about to bring people in front of the king.
Right. Yes.
He's got to introduce them in some way. Well, I found these two, or found these four guys.
Right.
So I don't know. I certainly wouldn't put it past anyone.
Part of the reason,
right?
Well, if you got a chance to make yourself look good, it's an interesting contrast where And I actually do lean on that. I think this is just, he's just announcing to the king that he's found somebody. But there is an interesting contrast where Arioch is saying, I've found someone. I guess it's like this. I don't necessarily think Eric is trying to take credit, but he is bringing credit, not just really to himself, but to Daniel. I found someone. He can do it. And Daniel is very quick to say there's a God who's going to give you the interpretation.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's not just that he found Daniel as well. I think it's interesting that he describes him as an exile of Judah.
Mm, yeah.
Because that identifies who his God is, mm-hmm. Beforehand. But yeah, Daniel's quick to say, not me. There's no one on earth that could do what you asked, mm-hmm. is essentially what he's mm-hmm. saying. But the God that I serve can, right? And then it goes on from there.
Yeah, it's, you wonder how many of the other, magicians and sorcerers and all, you wonder how many are there. Mm-hmm. And if they're saying, see, we told you that only a God can reveal this. But it does emphasize, it's interesting that there is a God, right? Now, it's the true God. Mm-hmm. It's the only true God. There are no other gods. There is one God. But when you're in this pagan society with this, this understanding of a pantheon of gods or mm-hmm. multiple gods, the focusing in, you're not getting into the debate of there's only one God, but you kind of are. There is a God, mm-hmm. and he reveals dreams. It just focuses without any kind of we're going to get into some theological debate about this. Yeah. It's we're going to focus on the God who actually does.
Yeah, well, he is the God of gods, the Lord of lords, right? I mean, there's all sorts of false gods, and we understand those are not true gods. Those mm-hmm. are created creatures or right. created beings that have been made up or demonic powers of some sort, right? We get that. They're idols. But where someone claims multitude of gods, the Lord is, Yahweh is, the God of all gods. He is the Lord right. of all lords, right? He's not just a regional or national mm-hmm. god like all the other quote-unquote gods, right?
Right.
The God of Babylon, the God of, this or that. He is the God over all gods. Yeah. And so that's what Daniel is drawing attention to, I think, right? The God in heaven
yes.
reveals mysteries, right? Yeah. This is and he's the only one there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's scripture talks about Satan calls the God of this world.
Yeah.
At times. I mean, yeah. But, yeah. It's like, well, there it says right there. See, Satan's a god because mm-hmm. it says he's the god of this world. And we've always got to take things within context.
Yes, absolutely.
It's interesting when we were talking before about mystery and mm-hmm. and we started talking about outer space and I said I was going to go there.
Oh, yeah. Where are we going with that?
Well, as our modern times continue to become mm-hmm. more modern, you can see that the belief in God in and of itself kind of starts to diminish. Whether that's people, I'm not even saying like all these people are becoming atheists.
Sure.
I mean diminish in the sense of well, yeah, there's maybe we're kind of forming into a deism or a multiple God deism where you're finding more and more people that even say that they're Christians that want to say, well, but Christianity isn't the only way to heaven.
Sure.
There's other. What about, Buddhists are going to go to heaven and all this, This idea of our understanding of who God is can be, a pantheon of gods. Mm-hmm. But as that's happening, we are starting to see a rise in the belief of aliens. And it's interesting to me because we're talking about mystery, whereas we've lost the mystery or a lot of the mystery, not completely, but we've lost a lot of that working mystery that we live with mm-hmm. that we're actually now reaching out beyond the world to pull in mystery that
and create our own mystery.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So by aliens, you don't mean migrants from another country. You mean
I'm not meaning that.
You mean extraterrestrials, those from another planet somewhere. Right. Yeah.
And you're finding more and more people that will say that there's got to be other worlds that have, you know, and it's and I get that. I get why that there's kind of this logic that going on where I think it's Carl Sagan that said. That if the universe, if we're the only ones, then it's a waste of space, which is an incredibly contradictory quote from a very ardent atheist, because if we look at the universe as something that now that there's only one planet with people on it or life, and it's been wasted, who's wasting it?
Sure. Right.
Even with him trying to talk about prove the point that there must be other worlds, he actually destroys his own point.
Sure,
because there has to be some sort of designer,
and it also suggests a morality, right, of some sort outside of himself. Yeah. But you know, I think as you know, I'm sure the first big one that I remember hearing about was like the Hubble telescope, and now. The James Webb telescope, which has even
incredible images,
wonderfully beautiful images. And we're seeing even more of, you know, the universe around us, space and outer space and such. I think there's more and more mysteries that are kind of just being made up, you know, but people just think that also that the probabilities of us being alone is infinitesimal, right? Like, how can that be?
They're starting with the foundation. They're starting with the foundation of Big Bang and evolution.
Sure.
And so if evolution is true and it created life on this world and there's 50 billion other worlds, then there must be life on other worlds.
Of course. I get that.
It's logical.
Yeah. And just mathematically, it's so big, there has to be somewhere else. But it is interesting, you know, we're way off subject right now, but you know, what you said about people going from atheism. And so you had the rise of new atheism and then, you know, the kind of demise of new atheism, it kind of went away. There's a fellow who's been following that. And then what he calls the surprising rebirth of belief in God. Mm-hmm. And there's a book with that title. There's a podcast with that title. And I followed it pretty regularly. It's in the second season now. And it's quite interesting of intellectuals who are converting in some way to a belief in God. Most of them Christian, in name, you know, whether or not it's a Protestant or, you know, there's Catholic, there's probably Orthodox, Greek Orthodox or Eastern Orthodox, but it's very interesting. The conversations he has with people who have, gone from atheism to, an openness to a spiritual world, a world of mystery, a world of, where God allows for light, you know, draws the light and brings the light, and reveals and does supernatural things. It's kind of amazing that intellectuals in the sciences, in mathematics and all sorts of things are saying, it's just so, you know, moving essentially from intelligent design arguments to a true religious understanding, that they're realizing there is more and more complex mystery to this world. And the only explanation is a God, the God of heaven and earth. And many of them have, you know, come to faith in Jesus Christ, which is just beautiful to hear about. Now, you know, we're not all on the same theological page, but it is it's a very, very wonderful thing to read about and hear, as it's all, I've done it all through podcasting. But you know, you're not going to agree with everything that you listen to on it. And some of it's political and, some of it's cultural, but it's still very interesting. This, you know, to go from what you were talking about, right? a world of mystery. Do we still need God? Mm-hmm. But these people who are brilliant in their fields, mm-hmm. they're all saying yes.
Yeah.
They're all saying we have been less for it as we who rejected any spiritual life, any inner life, mm-hmm. any otherness, and now we're embracing it. We are the better for it now than what we were before. And the world would be better off if we all, you know, submitted ourselves in some way to an understanding of who God is. Now, we, of course, would say the God of the Bible,
right?
The Trinitarian right. God of the Bible. So that's yeah. at different degrees with the people that they're yeah. talking to on this podcast. But it is quite interesting. And, you know, going back to people like Jordan Peterson, right. who has not embraced Christianity at all.
No, he's not.
But has opened the door for a lot of people to.
Right.
That's one of the interesting things about the... Now, we're way off subject. Sorry, Rob.
No, that's okay.
One of the interesting things about this is that he talks to a lot of people who, like Jordan Peterson, was a gateway drug to bring them actually into faithful churches.
That's interesting.
And Peterson isn't, right?
Right.
And anyway...
Peterson went from an atheism to kind of a deism.
Yeah, the idea of a supernatural interacting with the world, right. that really just blows right. his mind. Now, and mind you, yeah. I've not listened to him except for a few interviews, so I don't know much about his stuff except for secondhand.
And that's why I was, I wanted to stay away from it. I'm not saying people are becoming atheistic. It's becoming more of a deism.
Sure.
Yeah, like you're like spiritual, like a consciousness that has some and a lot of impact on the universe, even to the point of creation, but not necessarily the Christian God.
Right, right. Yeah. But he's this one.
Yeah, but the podcast you're talking about
is documenting more of those that end up in Christianity, right. Which is interesting. Yeah. But I mean, bringing this back to Daniel, maybe we see a God who is interacting
right.
with history,
right?
Now, the gods, quote-unquote gods, that the others, the enchanters, the other wise men claim to interact with, don't do that. They can't do that, right? And so Daniel and his friends praying and Daniel receiving this vision in the night from God, from the Lord, from Yahweh, speaks directly to the fact that God does interact with human beings, with history. He enters into history. He does this, and this speaks to us how he will engage with us throughout history and eventually in his son with the word when he comes taking on human flesh, right? And that's a very remarkable thing that we as Christians, so very often I think, except for maybe once a year when we're at Christmas time, think about and dwell upon. But this God who is here interacting with Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar and bringing his people through this season of exile, of chastisement and discipline because of the curse, the cursings of God because of their disobedience, and breaks the people. But he does that out of a love for his people, the remnant, and will do all of this to save his people in the end. And this is the God of heaven and earth who speaks to Daniel, gives him his dreams and the interpretation, and he's the one who will send his son into the world to take on human flesh and to die. I mean, that's pretty, and I'm using this word in a very unremarkable way. It's very remarkable.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Well, we mentioned this, I think, last week, that here at the beginning of the exile, the Jewish people are given this hope that God is in control, that he's sovereign. They're given hope that God is still speaking to his people, through his people. There's a witness going forth. Remember, the nation of Israel was, as the visible people of God, were to be light to the nations.
Yeah.
And something that I'm not exactly sure if they really took to heart. They didn't really do that great of a job because they... Yeah.
I don't think they did. That's an area of great weakness of Israel of old, right?
Right.
And at times of ours as well,
yeah,
as modern day Christians.
But when Christ comes, you know, we've had the northern kingdom, Israel, that was conquered by Assyria, that was scattered. Mm-hmm. So we have the dispersia, and then Judah, of course, ends up in Babylon. But not everybody comes back from Babylon,
right?
And so there's even then those who do come back, it's just a remnant. So, but when Rome, when Christ comes at the time of Rome, we have these pockets of Israelites throughout mm-hmm. the known world. It's almost as if God, who told them to be witnesses to the world, then dispersed them into the world
yeah.
so that they can be that witness.
Yeah, and many of them, we might say, even, I think we can say that, came back mm-hmm. like on the day of Pentecost, right, from different parts,
yeah, right?
You see the different nations mm-hmm. representative there, or not nations necessarily, but people groups,
yeah.
Jews from different parts of the right. of the empire. And then they become Christians, and then they go.
And they go back.
They go back. Right with the word,
yeah. It really is interesting, and but here again, right at the beginning, the message that God is sovereign over the world and history is something that comforted Daniel, and it should comfort us.
Once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. You can find us at reformedforum.org. You can also check out all the great resources at reformedforum.org. Right now, I'd say you want to check out the conference that's coming up, because that's the next Theology Conference, 2025 Annual Theology Conference. Things concerning himself, Christ in all the scriptures, discover God's unfolding plan of redemption. We have wonderful lineup, Lane Tipton, Jim Cassidy, Carlton Wynn, Dan Ragusa, and Camden Busey for that engagement in September 27th, 2025. Go to reformforum.org to register for that conference. I haven't said this in a long time. If you haven't done it recently, why don't you leave us a review at iTunes? It's been a long time.
We always used to say, you know, give us 5 stars,
yeah.
Leave a nice review, and then if you have time, listen to the show.
But I don't know if we have any new listeners in the last 5 years or not. But
I don't know if people still use iTunes. I think.
Yeah, well, there are still things that they're regularly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's still out there. Not necessarily iTunes itself, but online.
Okay,
that's
sure.
a way. Yeah. Anyway, rate us. Give us 5 stars. Give us some words of encouragement through that medium. It does help with the podcast going out and getting recognized and being seen and all that kind of stuff.
And soon, Theology Simply Profound, the Peter Diet will come out.
All right. Well, you can also go to westminsteropc.org to find out about the congregation that Rob and I serve, as well as chicagoreformed.org. To see and all the other OPC congregations within the Chicagoland area. Rob, what are we talking about next time?
Next time we'll actually look at the vision that Nebuchadnezzar was given.
At the vision itself. All right. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.